And then there's a photograph of a Leopard 2 tank. It's standing in the factory, and then behind it you see the trains. So you kind of see the contrast. One of the people that we interviewed who used to work there and who still works there said, okay, before we were building things where people could be transported in, and now we're building things that are killing people.
Welcome to the Heist Podcast. I'm Ben Schumann-Stoller. In this episode, Heist founding editor Peter Matthews talks to investigative reporter Leia Fout about her reporting earlier this year for German national radio in Görlitz and Osnabrück, where two factories are being repurposed for the German military. Instead of electric cars and trains, which they used to build, they're building tanks, the German Leopard 2 or Leopard 2, and other military components. Peter and Leia talk about how the communities, the cities, the unions, and the workers there are responding to this new era of German investment in defense and arms manufacturing. Now, where did this all come from? Well, 3 days after Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, then Bundeskanzler Olaf Scholz announced a Zeitenwende, a changing of the times. It amounts to hundreds of billions of euros since then that have been put aside in Sondervermögen, what they call like special budgets, especially put aside for defense spending. Plus, all this is happening in the context where Germany's auto industry has been struggling. For example, it was reported recently that Volkswagen will fire 100,000 people in the next few years. So what's happening at these factories right now shows us how things stand. This is the result of both Germany's economic issues and the renewed investment in its military. One note before you hear the interview, though. We recorded Peter and Leia in May this year, and since then a few things have changed. The VW factory in Osnabrück that they talk about is not going to produce components for the Israeli Iron Dome. They talk about that, but that deal was canceled. Still, that factory looks certain to produce arms in one form or another starting next year. It's just not clear yet exactly what they'll be making. Okay, don't forget, if you want to support our local journalism and hear more stories from Berlin that matter to the whole world, you can become an accomplice and help us keep our worker-owned magazine going. Supporting Heist is just 9 euros a month. You can sign up at heistberlin.com. Thanks. Here's Peter Matthews and Leia Fout.
As well as talking about Berlin stories, we want to bring our listeners sort of relevant, interesting stories from across Germany. And that means today we've got a guest who's made a documentary for German national radio. They're part of a Berlin-based collective called Randrecherche. Leia, thanks for coming very much. Well, you went and visited a factory where we see playing out the change in German policy that's become known as the Zeitenwende, the kind of changing of the times when it regards to militarization. So Germany's been taking factories which used to make buses or trains and turning them into military production. So, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming. And what's your program about?
Yeah, we went to Görlitz and Osnabrück to have two examples of this trend in Germany that factories turn into armament factories. So the one in Görlitz used to build trains, quite famous ones. They're called Doppelstockzüge, which are like double-decker trains.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you see them.
The red ones,
around.
Exactly. You see them. It's the regional one. And they're quite famous, and they even they built a lot of these trains also to export them. And it's been 176 years that they were building them, and so they're just switching now to build parts of a tank, the famous Leopard 2 Panzer. So it's a tank that's unfortunately, I have to say, it's quite famous in Germany also because there was a huge debate about this. If yes or no, they're going to deliver it to Ukraine, which in the end they did. But in 2023, there was a huge debate on this because it was the first heavy weapon that they were going to send to Ukraine, where there was always a doubt about should they actually send this kind of heavy weapon to Ukraine, because that could mean that they're entering the war.
As a kind of more of a participant rather.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was the debate, and that's how the Leopard 2 Panzer became a bit famous. And so KNDS is the company that's building these tanks, and in Görlitz, the factory that was building the double-deck trains is now building parts of this tank. Yeah,
and so can you tell us, what was it like to go to Görlitz? I mean, as you said in your thing, these trains were quite famous. They were also exported to countries around the world, Ghana, Indonesia, I think you said in your report. So, yeah, I think that was one thing that I liked in your documentary. You were talking to people who had worked at the factory for years and whose parents maybe had worked at the factory. I mean, it's been a really long history there. So, yeah, can you tell me, what was the atmosphere like? I think you specifically went to Görlitz, is that correct?
Yeah, my colleague Paul Welchgerer, he went to Osnabrück. In neither of the cases, we could enter the factory, actually, so that we had not this real insight. It was forbidden to enter. But we were in front of the factories trying to talk to the workers that were coming out. And it was also quite telling that the people coming out of the factory mostly said, I can't say anything about this. So we were asking them, what do you think about this change, this conversion to armament? And they said, I'm not allowed to talk. Or they just said, I don't want to talk. And then some would still answer. But there was an atmosphere of tension. That's one thing we could grasp. And we could not enter the factory, but there's one photograph of the beginning of 25, where Olaf Scholz, then still chancellor, went to this factory to publicly declare that KNDS will now, that this armament company will now build tanks there. And then there's a photograph of a Leopard 2 tank. It's an exhibit, just, but it's standing in the factory, and then behind it you see the trains, the double-deck trains. So you kind of see the contrast, and somehow there's nothing more to add, just to think that, okay, they were building something. Well, one of our one of the people that we interviewed who used to work there and who still works there said, okay, before we were building things to where people could be transported in, and now we're building things that are killing people. So, and in this one picture, you could kind of see that. So,
mm-hmm. What are, like, it seems like a silly question maybe, but like, what is a Leopard 2 tank? Like, do you know exactly kind of what goes into sort of making it? And also, where do they go when they leave the factory? Who uses them in what conflicts?
So, yeah, it's a... in German, we say Kampfpanzer, which means that it's there are different kinds of weapons, right, who are more of a defensive or more of an offensive kind. And Kampfpanzer really means it goes to the battle.
It's on the front line or something.
Yes, it is. So, and as I mentioned before, it became famous in 2023 because people were discussing if it should go to Ukraine, and it went. And I think the question, where do they go, is really interesting, because, of course, Germany says it's a German production. They say we have a lot of control and rules about where it's going. But just yesterday, Kim Jong-un opened an exhibition, and there was a Leopard 2 tank, and he was very proud and said that it was that they kind of managed to take it from the Ukraine war, which is not certain if that's true. But the fact is that he has a Leopard 2 tank in North Korea. And I found that kind of funny because, I mean, there's barely any country where you could say more clearly that Germany or the German government would consider it an enemy, and it has their tanks. So it's not even that important how Kim Jong-un got this tank. Maybe he got it for real in the Ukraine war. Maybe he managed to buy it through some intransparent way. We don't know, but the fact is it can always end up in someone else's hand. There's no control and no transparency about where these weapons go. And there's another example. Rheinmetall is also producing all kinds of weapons. And
Rheinmetall are like the largest military production firm in Germany.
Exactly. And they were found, like, some parts of their arms were found in Russian drones. And then they also said, it's, we didn't do that. It must be some subcontractor who sold it to another subcontractor. Okay, but as a result, Rheinmetall produces, builds parts of weapons that end up in Russian drones. So there, here we are, like the statements of the government, of the German government, saying, "Oh, we have it all under control. We just do that for our own defense." Well, no, it's not true. It's going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also interesting because as part of this kind of famous Zeitenwende, Germany also reversed its kind of long-standing post-war policy of not sending arms to active war zones. And so that meant that I think, yeah, certainly that they could arm Ukraine, they could also arm Israel. But then it's interesting to me that I didn't realize that you say that the parts of the weapons or components in them are also ending up in the kind of officially prescribed enemies of Germany. You know, they wouldn't sell arms to North Korea or Russia directly, but nevertheless, as a result of this manufacture, it does kind of end up there. That's really interesting. I also wanted to ask, because people might ask, like, you know, what's the alternative here? And I think your reporting does tackle that kind of, you know, especially in the Osnabrück case, there was the idea maybe that they could, instead of making, I think it's tanks they're making now, I'm not sure, but, you know, they could be making e-buses or they could be doing part of the kind of green mobility transition. Do you think that the decision to remilitarize and convert these factories into military production is like a deliberate political choice and which is like also a choice not to take another path, for example, to make green technology?
Yeah, absolutely. So Osnabrück is a little different from the case in Görlitz. In Görlitz, they are already building the parts of Leopard spy tanks. In Osnabrück, it's still a car factory from Volkswagen, but they're about to organize and arrange that there will be takeover. It will be by Iron Dome, like this. So it will be Iron Dome, the Israeli weapon that will be built there.
Which is the missile defense shield or whatever.
And so that was decided recently. But so in Osnabrück, it's not yet, it didn't happen yet. So there's still protesters that are trying to hinder this, and it's not yet totally done, let's say. So there's still a possibility that this might change. We don't know. It is a VW factory, a Volkswagen factory, but they were building buses that were also used for public transport, minibuses. So there's already the technical ability to build something that's meant for public transport. And of course, it is a political decision. This is the parallel between the two cities, because the question is where does the public money go, and what budget do we have? So the budget, the Sondervermögen, the special budget, was meant to finance military spending and also other spending. So what they pretended somehow was to say, we're going to spend more money on everything, on public transport and so on.
Infrastructure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The thing is, if you look at the numbers, you see that this special budget is rising for public transport, but the regular budget that was meant to finance public transport is going down, it's dropping.
I see.
So as a result, the budget for public transport is dropping. Whereas actually the military spending is duplicating in the upcoming 5 years, more than duplicating actually. So we see clearly that there is a political decision in financing weapons and not public transport, and actually lowering the budget of public transport. So it is clearly a political decision, and that's also what people in the factories told us. Or, I mean, we were not in the factories, but people from the factory told us that of course, in Görlitz, they preferred to build trains, but there is just no budget for that. And this is a public
choice.
It's a political and public choice to not finance more trains, which is absurd because we would need that for ecological mobility. Mm. But it's clearly not in the priorities of the German politics. Yeah.
And tell us about the role of the unions in this. I mean, I understand it from their thing, you know, that they say, well, our key role is just to protect jobs. But, you know, do you feel that they are conflicted? Do you feel that they were trying to push in a different direction? Or is their focus more or less in line with the companies?
Yeah, it really depends on who you're talking to. And there are a lot of different levels. So So this union, the strongest union in these technical jobs and the factory jobs is IG Metall. And they're very strong in Germany. They have a lot of power. But you also have to see that they have a strong hierarchy, and that the opinions differ from depending on where they are in the hierarchy. So it seems that IG Metall even arranged or was helping to arrange the takeover in Görlitz. They wanted the KNDS, the armament manufacturer, to come there to save jobs. But then we also talked to a person from IG Metall who was actually working in the factory and who was organizing the union locally. And he said, well, he didn't feel respected by his superiors in IG Metall. He had a different opinion on that. So he said, we absolutely prefer to build trains. In the end, he also argued that for him, it's more important to have a job. So there are really different positions. And I think what is interesting recently, that was because of Osnabrück, because what is planned in Osnabrück, some IG Metall workers gathered and they made a public letter where they signed with their real names saying that they don't want an armament, like a conversion to armament. So it was a gathering of workers from Volkswagen and several people from IG Metall. So it would be interesting to see if they will gather enough people to put pressure on the higher placed people in IG Metall. Yeah.
And I suppose, yeah, that's another question about the, like, because we think about these things as very kind of like national and, you know, it's about the sort of interactions between countries and but it actually sort of affects the specific places. You went to Görlitz and Osnabrück. What are the debates that are actually happening on the ground in these towns like?
So between Görlitz and Osnabrück, we saw a difference. So in Görlitz, there was not much protest. And
do you think that's because the decision's already made? They're already making the components?
Somehow, yes. But even back then, there seemed not to be a lot of protest. But it's true that the decision went public like this, and there was no time for the protest to form. That's what they told us, the people that we talked to who tried to organize a protest. But all in all, even people in the factory would say, well, I don't care what I'm building here, I just care for having a job. Some people said things like this, not all of them. And in Osnabrück, I think it's different because the activist groups had more time. So my colleague Paul was in Osnabrück accompanying one of these, two of these activists. And they were in the streets talking to people, not just to the people in the factory, but to people in the city, to tell them about this and discuss it. And of course, there are a lot of different opinions. Some people support the idea of an armament in Germany, but at least there was a discussion, there was a debate in the public space. And these activists are also doing several little, like putting protest banners, doing whatever, some gatherings in front of the factory to talk to the workers there. And I think that helps to draw some attention on this and public attention and to provoke a debate, to make the debate happen. I think that's important so that something will move. But in the end, we also have to see that it's up to IG Metall. I think there will not be much happening if IG Metall is supporting the conversion to an armament factory.
And what about the politics within Germany? I mean, it feels like I think almost every major party in Germany sort of been behind the rearmament, the Zeitenwende. And I suppose my question is, how much of that, you know, some of you'd be surprised to think that the Greens, for example, were so in favour of arms production when there seems to be this alternative path of a kind of energy transition. And so I suppose how, but also Germany has been sort of struggling. It's worrying about its auto, about its car manufacturing and so on. So I suppose the question is, like, how much of this transition do you feel like is real concerns about defense, and how much is there some kind of like economic opportunism? Opportunism. We see a opportunity in a struggling economy to find this growth sector, and let's invest in that.
It's a very good question and very difficult to answer. I think so. There are several levels, and I think like in like some individuals in Germany and people to whom we talk to in the street, they are honestly worried about wars, and they honestly think that more weapons will help. And then I think there's also some politicians who really think that. But it's very hard sometimes to distinguish if they really think it's useful or if they actually think it's useful because of economic profit. And I think that it's kind of mixed up, because we also have to see that the weapon industry has a very strong lobby and they have direct contacts to politicians. So it might be that these two arguments will just mix up in the head of a politician, who will think it's good for this one big company or several big companies, weapon manufacturers, but it's also good because we need to defend ourselves. So I think it might be mixed up, and I'm never quite sure how honest it is. Of course, there are a lot of studies and cases in history where we can see that usually owning more weapons and arming a country is not helpful for peace, which seems logical, but it's unfortunately not. Some people think that because you have weapons, you can threaten other countries and then they won't even dare to attack you. But in fact, if one country starts arming itself, then others will do also. And it means that we just have more weapons in the world, and heavier ones. So the kind of wars that will take place are just more terrible.
I mean, and then I also want to ask just specifically about the kind of Iron Dome production. I mean, do you think that you know, one could see why maybe the Leopard 2 tanks would be more popular, because the Ukrainian war is seen as a kind of just war, as, you know, defending against this kind of aggression. But it's also true that, you know, Germany is now, I think, the second largest arms supplier after the United States to Israel. And building the components of this missile system, do you think that when the production gets associated with these more controversial conflicts, that the status of the whole Zeitenwende vendor changes?
Yes, and it's very interesting what the actual government wrote in its coalition agreement, because sure, this Zeitenwende back then was to say, oh, we need to help our allies and we need to send weapons everywhere. And now in the actual coalition agreement of CDU and SPD, they say we want to focus more on Germany's economic interests when it comes to armament. So they
so it's quite explicit,
openly
they're saying,
say
yeah.
it, that it's more about this than to help others. Of course, you can also doubt back then if it was really just for helping, because there's also numbers who show that already in 2023, Ukraine was not the first country to get weapons. Weapons are primarily sold to Saudi Arabia, to India, and to the United Emirates. I mean, we know what kind of wars Saudi Arabia is doing. And so even the discourse back then in 2023, you could say it was a bit hypocritical, because it was not only to help others. But now they openly say that it should be more focused on the German profit. So, yes, they give the answer themselves, actually. Yeah.
And so, yeah, after making these two documentaries, what's the one sort of piece of your reporting or image or moment that you sort of stays with you?
I think that, so we picked out these two cities, Osnabrück and Görlitz, but they're really just two examples of a trend in Germany where a lot of factories that used to build cars or trains will convert to armament. There's also a company named Liebherr in Rostock who is now starting building parts of tanks. And then even the CEO actually of the KNDS, which is one of the biggest weapon companies, he's called Frank Hohenwarter. He used to be a manager in the car industry and he's now in the weapon industry. So these two cities are just two small examples of a trend. And well, I mean, it's also obvious when we see the budget that I explained before, where, okay, the military spending is extremely high and then others drop. So, yeah, I think that's what stays with me. I think it's interesting because some of the people that we talked to said, well, we need to be able to defend our country and so on. But it's also, I mean, even if you took that, let's say, selfish perspective to just think of how can we survive, even then it's not necessarily consistent, because if you're living in a city with a big armament factory, you will be one of the targets, and if there's a war for real, and it's so even in this perspective, it doesn't really make sense. And I mean, everyone has their opinion, but of course, it's a kind of scary idea that everywhere in Germany they're producing now weapons. And I think what one very symbolic thing that also that I found striking is that Volkswagen used to produce weapons under the Nazi regime. And in Osnabrück, they're kind of turning back to that now, because they're not just selling their factory to a company and then there's weapons to be built. They're making joint ventures with these companies. So they're going back to this. And
The post-war policy of not exporting weapons, or of not Germans' kind of aversion to military production, came from a place, right? It didn't come from nowhere. It came from the experience of the Second World War, mm-hmm. and so on. So it's like it does always carry this kind of mm-hmm. darker legacy, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I think that's great. Maybe that was one of the things. You can tell us anything that you'd like to tell us about Randrecherche. So you're a Berlin-based collective making radio documentaries. What else can you say?
So we're all in all, we're four journalists. So on this specific topic, it was three of us working on it. And yeah, we're a collective, but we're actually not only doing radio, we're publishing for several media, but we just started and there will be more to come.
Leah from Rand Recherche, thanks very much for coming.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Heist podcast. And thanks to Leah Fouth. We'll link to her reports from German radio here, of course, in the show notes. Keep an eye on her group, Rand Recherche. They're going to be doing some interesting investigations. We'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks. In the meantime, send us tips, send us ideas, send us your feedback. Really, we'd love to hear what you think of the podcast so far. Our email is hello@heistberlin.com. Bye.
Meine Flasche.